anything advancing pleasure.
This Doug and Daddy podcast brought to you by Cunningham's Journal. Cunningham's Journal, the only bar you need to know in Kearney. They didn't have what it takes to be astronauts. They don't fit the foreign diplomat mold. Their computer science careers were cut short. And the banking world still blanches at the mere mention of their names. But when it comes to sports in central Nebraska, they know their stuff. And so without further ado, mostly because we're out of it, Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation presents The Doug and Daddy Show.
Welcome into a Friday edition of the Doug and Daddy Show. Derek Stinson here hanging with you in studio today. Doug and Daddy both not in studio today, both a little under the weather, so they're having a day off, taking it easy. I'm going to take you into the weekend. We've prepared kind of a best of show for you today, gone back over the first couple of months of 2009 here and drawn on some of the best interviews that we've had over the last couple of months as well. So we'll bring you a couple of interviews today on a best of edition of the Doug and Daddy Show here on Friday. Again, Derek Stinson here hanging with you, Doug and Daddy, out of studio today. And again, some of these interviews that we have lined up, some of them very popular. Our first interview that we're going to pull up for the best of edition of the Doug and Daddy Show today, Hank Parker. Daddy was all fired up to have Hank Parker on the program leading up to the Bassmaster Classic. And you know Daddy, big fisherman there. He loves fishing, so he loved to talk to Hank Parker. Here's that interview from a little earlier this year on the Doug and Daddy Show.
Well, I think in 1979, the winner's share of the Super Bowl was $18,000. It's now $78,000. So I think he'll tell you the money's vastly different now. Hank, how are you?
Hey, it's the same scenario. It's $1 million a day, and the first time I won it was $25,000.
That probably bought you a pretty fancy boat, though, in 79, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, you could get a boat and a truck for $25,000 in 1979. That was a cool thing.
It is unbelievable how far the sport has come, and I guess if there are a lot of people interested, and there always are in fishing, and there always have been, but now it's just become more popular to get out on the circuit. And we talked about this at the top of the show, Hank, with the money out there, and now so many stories about economy and how it's going to affect sports. Let's start there. How will the economy right now affect sponsorships, affect the money, maybe affect the total number of tournaments when this thing is really just starting to hit its peak?
Well, I think that a lot of momentum from the prize money is going to go, especially on the BASS side. They've cut prize money a little bit, and they've upped the entry fees, so that's a little pinch on the anglers. But on the other side, you have companies like Exmark that I'm here in Nebraska working with who understand the demographics of their market and say, hey, you know, fishing is a big part of American heritage, and it's a big sport that has a lot of popularity. We want to team up with some of these outdoorsmen, and we want to let our product be showcased in that fishing market. So the Exmark guys have made a tremendous commitment, and there's a lot of companies doing the exact same thing, understanding the value of the fishing demographic, rather than us as fishermen depending solely on rods and reels and terminal tackle.
Hank, when we talk about the Bassmaster Championship and people see the guys pulling their SUVs with their boats on and the guys in their boats into an arena filled with people screaming at them, take us through a day of the Bassmaster Classic and how many hours are involved for those guys and for you when you fished in them.
Well, I've been on both sides of the boat where I was the hero and I was the zero, so it depends on what kind of day you had on the water on how it feels to be towed through that marina behind that or that Coliseum with that boat and all the people screaming and hollering with high expectations. So if you don't catch any fish, that's a terrible place to be. If you've got a boatload, it's a fabulous place to be, and I've been on both sides of that. So it's exciting, and you really have to focus much like on a much smaller scale. Like the guys that are at the Super Bowl, you can't get caught up in all the pageantry of the Bassmaster Classic. Your job is to go out on the water and beat the fish. You don't have other anglers that you're competing against. You're completely competing against the fish, and it's up to your performance, and you can't make any mistakes. And so you just can't get caught up in all that. You have to stay focused on my job is to go out and do the best job I can do while I'm on the water.
You know, I think it's interesting because you guys start so early in the morning, but by the time you're done, how much sleep do you get that week when you're preparing throughout that week?
I have honestly gone all week long on about 10 hours for the total week, so you don't get much sleep. There's a lot of preparation time behind the scenes that people are not aware of changing line, getting lures ready, and boat preparation, and you've got all these functions that you have to go to from the time you weigh in, then you got to go to a press conference, then you have to go to a dinner, and by the time you get through, it's 10 o'clock at night, and then you've got to get all your tackle out of the boat and get everything straightened out, put back in the boat, and that may be or may not be right next to the hotel. You may have to travel to a boatyard to get your equipment, and it is a it's an all-nighter, and then you're up at 3:30 or 4 a.m.
Hank Parker's joining us here on the Doug and Daddy Show. He's representing Exmark Manufacturing today. We'll talk about that in just a second. Of course, the first bass angler to win the Grand Slam of bass fishing. You know, Hank, the only reason Daddy asked you that question is so that he can honestly go to the wife and say, it does require this much time for me to fish, honey.
Well, that's a man with his priorities right. I like that. Got to set those strategies.
Hank, when you've made the decision, and obviously it was a calculated decision to get into the TV and get away from the competitive angling, what all went into that decision?
Well, I made the decision because, you know, the era that I was involved in fishing, you really could not live off of prize money. You had to have sponsors, and the way you got your sponsors, you got yourself in a position that you could create a consumer demand for a product, and the more exposure you got, then the more effective you were as a spokesperson. So it was only natural to try to gravitate toward being able to promote yourself, and television was the step. And when I got in, I didn't know anything at all. I backed out about 20 times that first year, you know, wanting to quit. What have I got myself into? But all in all, it worked out really good, and it's been exciting. I teamed up with a producer that didn't know anything about fishing but knew a lot about entertainment and television, and so he and I collectively, his name is Bill Landers. Bill and I made a real good pair, and we've enjoyed 25 years.
Hank, when did you feel that the show really took off, starting back in 1985? When did you realize, hey, this is going to be okay?
Well, I'm a lot like Forrest Gump. I'm not a smart man. I just starting to realize that now. I think I'm going to be all right.
Hank, for the folks out there, they see on TV, they know about your travels. Where have you had the most success or feel that the best fishing is?
You know, I get that question a lot, and I probably one of my favorite places to go that you almost always catch fish and you always catch quality fish is Lake Champlain up on the New York-Vermont-Canadian border. It's one of my favorite places to go. It's very pristine, and smallmouth fishing is fabulous. Largemouth fishing is good, and it's just a great place to be.
Hank, when you're breaking down and you're looking at the guys fishing today, you see Mike Iaconelli fall down and start screaming and maybe some bad words come out of his mouth. What's your thoughts on the new style of fisherman out there?
There is a different generation, and I try not to be a stick in the mud. Iaconelli off of the water is as nice a guy as you ever want to meet, but he puts that he's kind of like a lot of the race car drivers. Once you put that helmet on, you go brain dead. He gets on the water, he's like the Incredible Hulk. I don't know what the deal is, but he's as nice a guy as you'd ever want to meet one-on-one, and he's got tremendous fishing talent, but he is definitely over the top for me. And a lot of the other guys, they want to make it personal, and I think that the bass guys, more than the FLW guys, wanted to try to create some kind of controversy among anglers rather than you compete against the fish. I never, ever in my whole career looked at another angler and thought that I was competing against him personally. I was always competing against the lake and competing against the fish, and so we maintained a lot greater camaraderie among ourselves then than now.
Hank Parker joins us on the Doug and Daddy Show. Hank, I want to ask you on the fishing show side of things. You have a family fishing show, have a lot of fun out there. I think entertain the people greatly. You mentioned the new generation. You got a guy out there by Mark Zona. The guy is an absolute nut, man. He's a freak show. Do you know this guy, and have you spent any time with him?
I don't know, Mark. I've seen his show, and again, I'm an old fogey, so I don't particularly care for it. But you know, everybody tries to find a niche and make it their own way. And a lot of people have asked me the question. You know, you look at the new generation. Do you think the fishermen are as good or better than your generation? And quite frankly, I honestly think the fishermen are better. I think Kevin Van Dam is probably the best fisherman that that ever picked up a fishing rod to compete. So I try to give credit where credit's due. And these young kids, Anthony Gagliardi from South Carolina, I've watched his career. What an incredible fisherman he is. So there's a lot of young guys out there that have some charisma and have good ethics and are great fishermen. So I don't really think our sport's in trouble. I don't know. I know Van Dam's got a show, and some of these younger kids are going to come along and take my place before very long, I'm sure. And there's some good guys out there.
Well, Hank, for the folks out there, as we mentioned, you're in Nebraska, going to be going to Beatrice today with Exmark Manufacturing. What's going on?
I just got a plant tour, and I'm blown away. You know, I've ran Ranger boats all my life, my whole career, and they've always prided themselves on building the very best bass boat on the market. And I got involved with Exmark last year, and I started running a laser longmower, and it reminds me of Ranger boats, the pride that you take. I just went through a plant tour, and I met all the people on the floor that actually build the equipment, and the pride they take in their welds and their painting and everything that they do. It just reminds me so much of Ranger Boat Company.
Now, Hank, I have to ask you, a lot of people that have, you know, regular jobs get away from it by going fishing. How do you get away from fishing? What do you do to relax?
I have never lost the love for hunting and fishing, and there's only 365 days in a single year, and that's not enough. So I haven't got caught up yet. When I get caught up on hunting and fishing, then I may try to play golf or something.
Hank, we've got an email here, wants to know, in your opinion, who's got the better tour, FLW or Bass?
Well, they're both strong. I cut my teeth, and all my acclimates are with BASS. But I would say today, with where we're going in the market and the money, I think FLW probably has the overall best tour. I think they're more fair in their payout, and you literally can make a living without having sponsors. The payout is strong.
He's a two-time Bassmaster Classic champion, the first bass angler to win the Grand Slam of bass fishing. And, of course, you've been watching him for years on Hank Parker's Outdoor Magazine, currently airing on the Versus Network. It's been on the network or on a variety of networks since 1985. Hank, welcome to Nebraska, and we sure appreciate the time on the Doug and Daddy Show.
Well, Doug and Daddy both, I really appreciate you having me on, and next time I'm here, I'd like to be back on. It's been a real privilege.
Next time you're here, I'd like to get in a boat with you and see if we can't catch a walleye.
Hey, we're going to have to come in a little different time of the year. Right now, that water out there looks pretty hard.
You get back here in June or so, May or June, and we'll figure something out.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Thanks, Hank. Daddy's a big TV star, and I mean big. Thanks, Hank. All we right. Sure appreciate
guys.
It. Hank Parker joining us on the Doug and Daddy Show. Outstanding stuff. Outstanding stuff.
Hank Parker from earlier this year here on the Doug and Daddy Show. A great sport, and obviously the guys enjoyed talking to him a great deal. Hank Parker there on the Best of Doug and Daddy Show here today. Derek Stinson in for the guys today. They're out of the studio feeling a little under the weather, so I'll be taking you up to the noon hour. Coming up next, we're going to touch on baseball. Got a baseball Best of interview. Also going to talk some basketball and look back. Even some Husker football coming up on a Best of edition of the Doug and Daddy Show on Friday.
Well, I think
you're listening to the Doug and Daddy Show on Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation. Most of the sponsor messages you're about to hear did not realize their commercials were going to be in the Doug and Daddy Show. Pity.
They run for the fun.
Saturday and Sunday at Fodder Park, Grand Island, the Harley-Davidson Iron Horse Bike Show. See new and classic motorcycles. Register to win Harley leather jackets and other great prizes. Post times for live racing, 2 p.m. Friday, 1:30 Saturday and Sunday.
They run for the fun at Fodder Park.
For generations, Kearney Crete and Block and Christensen Concrete Products has been supplying Kearney and Grand Island with quality concrete and masonry needs. We are the experts on masonry and concrete products in the region. With over 140 years combined experience at our two locations, we're particular about who we deal with and what products we sell. Expect a high level of customer service at both our locations. Kearney Crete and Block and Christensen Concrete Products. Building generations, one block at a time.
More exciting high school basketball comes your way Friday night on our family of stations. On ESPN 1460, the Pleasanton girls take on Fall City Sacred Heart at 7:30. On ESPN 1550, it's Adams Central girls basketball. On 1230 KHAS, St. Cecilia and Minden girls play. It's Ravenna and Sutton on Power 99 and Silver Lake and Shelby on the Breeze, 94.5 FM. Plus, the Kearney High boys take on North Platte Saturday on ESPN 1460, and the games are on the web at ESPNSuperstation.com.
Hi, I'm Justin McBride, PBR World Champion.
This is Shelly Smith from ESPN.
Hi, this is Bob Davis with the Kansas City Royals.
This is Hotshot Branch of the world-famous Harlem Globetrotters. You're listening to ESPN Radio Superstation on 1460 KXPN and 1550 KICS.
We'll see considerable cloud cover and a few breaks of sun in spots through the day today with a chance for some light snow developing as well. Accumulations by this evening to coating to around an inch are possible with a high near 20. Winds will stay to the northeast at 5 to 15. We'll see a chance of light snow tonight with an inch or two possible with a low of 8 above. I'm Paul Trombley. Right now, 16.
Welcome back to the Doug and Daddy Show, Friday edition here on ESPN Radio. Derek Stinson hanging with you. Doug and Daddy both out of the studio today. Have a best of edition of the Doug and Daddy Show set up for you here today. Already heard from Hank Parker, fisherman extraordinaire. Daddy, obviously, love talking to Hank Parker. Also coming up from the Best of Archive here earlier this year down at Skeeter Barnes here in Kearney, the Royals caravan came through. Doug and Daddy were down there, got to catch up with some of the Royals players, and also caught up with Hall of Famer Dennis Leonard. Here's that interview now on the Doug and Daddy Show.
Doug and Daddy Show continues, and the Kansas City Royals last night out at Skeeter Barnes. Daddy, we got a chance to talk to quite a few of the folks as they get ready, and optimism is there for the 2009 season. They're in central Nebraska a little bit later this morning. They have a special presentation over in Minden with their Royalty Fields program. Then it's off to Lincoln and Omaha and all the great things that are going to be going on with Royals Fan Fest down in Kansas City this weekend. But every time that the caravan is along, and I know he was here earlier, maybe a couple of summers ago when the Legends came out and put on some youth clinics, and you've been saying the number 103 for like a week and a half now.
Well, I'm still just
complete games with Dennis Leonard.
Yeah, Dennis Leonard joins us. Dennis, thanks so much for stopping by today. And he was here for the golf outing, and then we found out that Dennis likes to hunt and fish, and we could have taken him fishing, but we didn't know that at the time. But welcome to the Doug and Daddy Show. Dennis, thanks so much.
Oh, not a problem. We still have a chance, maybe not at this particular time, but maybe this summer, set some things up.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you out.
He is a master angler. I'm not sure what he catches, but I know he's on the boat quite a bit. Dennis, when you get to be around these young kids, whether it's on a caravan or at the Royals, but, I mean, you're going to be on the road quite a bit, and traveling time is, I suppose, talking on the phone or talking to each other. What are you telling these kids? What do they need to know about maybe just, A, being a big leaguer? Because, again, quite a few of these guys pretty young.
Well, that is definitely true. They are young. And usually I was young at one time, but the problem is that they face now is that there's a lot of young players together. They had a few veterans, but when I came up, basically there's one or two rookies and basically a veteran team, and they kind of take you on the wing and kind of show you the way. So these guys are really learning on the fly, but basically, you know, as far as on the field stuff, every time you go out there, you know, be proud of wearing a major league uniform, and, you know, you're with the Royals, be proud of that uniform and appreciate every day you go out there.
Dennis, how frustrating have the last few years been for you and some of the guys you keep in contact with? When you look at the success you had at one time and the once proud franchise, and you shake your head, or what are your feelings on that?
Well, it is discouraging. You know, there was some restraints. I think I didn't know Alec Baird too well, but I have a feeling that he had a little bit more restraints put on him than Dayton Moore when he came over here, and, you know, things just didn't work out. I mean, I could look all the way back to the John Schuerholz era. I was already done playing, but Mr. Kaufman, God bless his soul, you know, right before he died, he wanted another championship. And, you know, John, the only way to get that done basically depleted the minor league system. You know, to get some older players there, it never quite worked out. So then all of a sudden John went to Atlanta, and he's very successful. Don't get me wrong, but at that time when I look back in Royals history, when that happened and when he left, then all of a sudden Herc Robinson took over, but you didn't have the minor leaguers to put up in the big leagues. And if you look at our successful years, yes, there was some great trades to get Amos Ondus, John Mayberry, Patek, but when you look at the success, you know, the Frank White, Woodorf, I mean, Al Cowens, Boquets, Wolfords, you know, Rich Gale. You know, you had a lot of players that were in the minor leagues, got a little taste of success in the minor leagues. And when we came up there, we didn't come up all at once. So, you know, we kind of blended in with the veterans, and they basically steered the way, you know, don't do this or don't do that. They kind of helped you out, because big leagues is not as easy as the minor leagues. And when you get up there, basically, there's a lot of ups and downs. And normally, for a pitcher anyway, you might have success very early. There was a young pitcher that came up one time. His name was Dave Chamberlain. And he came up, and boy, he didn't know what was going on. And he won three in a row. And, I mean, I can see him just chirping in the clubhouse, this, that, and the other thing. Then before you knew it, he was 3-4.
Yeah.
I mean, the hitters get a knack. And if you throw fairly hard, the veteran hitters did not want to stand in there until – they knew you could throw strikes. And, you know, those things, when you're going good, it's easy to be chirpy. But how do you deal with when you're losing? And that's the thing I think that you have to overcome.
Dennis Leonard's joining us here on the Doug and Daddy Show, a Royals Hall of Famer. As you take a look, I'm just thinking about Hochaver. I'm thinking about Alex Gordon. And that's just with the Royals. I mean, you can take a look at some of the other guys that don't or haven't spent a lot of time in the minors because the organizations want to get them up there and make them superstars right away. That didn't used to happen near as much, I think, as it does now. What is the biggest adversity that these guys have to overcome when they don't come up that minor league system?
Well, basically, like I mentioned earlier, learning on the fly. You know, you come up there and...
Is it on-field stuff, or do they have the
basically,
off-field stuff?
I think it's probably a little bit of both, because, you know, even in the minor leagues, although a lot of the minor leagues are the attendance, they're starting to, you know, have pretty good attendance, but they're not having 30,000, 40,000 people. They're not going into towns like New York and Boston and, you know, all these other big-time towns.
The bars stay open late, don't they?
But the thing is, they can't go out to them anymore. There's too much technology.
Yeah, everybody
and,
knows them.
You know, I look at that, and I'm not condoning going out and having a beer. I don't tell everybody to go do it. But the one thing in our era is very common. Our players were so close, not only on the field, but off the field. If we're on the road, you might have 10 or 12 guys, you know, having a beer in a bar or something, you know, chit-chatting about the game. But nowadays, if they're in there with all the technology, the next thing you know, it's going to be on a computer, YouTube, or I'm not even familiar with that stuff. So they're really restricted as far as their movement when they're on the road.
Dennis Leonard joins us here on the Doug and Daddy Show. One thing that's really changed over the years is 103 complete games, and I'm still amazed by that. That's a Royals record, and that's a record in which you have. That doesn't happen. That's a record which will never be broke. I can say that emphatically. It will never be broke. Why has that changed so much?
Well, basically, I think relief pitching got more notoriety. When I came up, we had some relievers. When I first signed, basically, when we broke the minor league camp, basically, the relievers were the guys that weren't good enough to be the starters. When you look at the way the game has progressed, now in the minor leagues, they have guys that basically came out of either college or high school or somewhere where I don't know who makes the decision, but they want them to pitch in relief. So they get an experience of pitching relief, and then they get to the big leagues, and you know they have a guy for the seventh, a guy for the eighth, and obviously the closer. But the mentality of the pitchers today probably would be like it was, but they don't allow it. I was talking to Luke here, you know, yesterday, and I said, did you throw a lot, you know, through your college career? He says, I threw all the time, but they shut us down. You know, we can't do any of this and do any of that. And I said, yeah. I said, you know, you have such, your techniques of training is so much different than we had. I said, we threw a lot and we ran a lot. We didn't have a weight really to lift in the clubhouse. So the progress, you know, it changed, but I don't know if it's for the good or the worse, because you see a lot of injuries now. A pitcher goes out, they're a starting pitcher, he's not expected to go nine. So if that's not in your train of thought, you go out there worrying about how many pitches you're throwing. You're only allowed 100 or 88. So you get into a game, a winning or losing situation, what are you going to do? You say, wow, you know, I got 20 pitches left and I'm starting an inning. I want to get this win. Yeah. So what do you do if you fall behind a couple times?
Did you ever have a pitch
worried? No.
What's the most in one game?
You know that? I know my first year I probably averaged about 136 pitches a game.
Dennis Leonard has joined us for just a couple more minutes. Is baseball better today than it was in your era? And I think we can throw the steroid era kind of right in the middle of it. I think we're coming out of that. It seems still pretty pure when maybe right up, maybe because the Royals won the World Series in 85, and after that, you know, most Royals fans kind of draw the line. Where do you think the state of the game is right now, just overall?
I think it's in really good shape. It's obvious by the numbers, you know, the people that show up. But everything is different. It's hard to compare. I think today's athletes are conditioned and trained a little bit different. I think they're bigger and stronger. I think the game has changed as far as they want to see more run production. You know, most of the fans that go to a game, if your home team wins and it's 8-7, they say, wow, people are running bases, base hits. They don't want to see a 1-0 pitching game. And, you know, not because I was a pitcher, but usually if something's taken away, you know, they lowered the mound, the strike zone got smaller. So these pitchers, you're not allowed to, and the big thing I see, what is really tough now, is you're not allowed to pitch inside. I mean, you get a little bit too far in, the next thing you know.
Well, you got all that gear on, they're allowed to wear all that gear, they're not scared, they don't care if they're on top of the plate.
And, you know, I don't think the respect is there that I've seen when I played. Because it was obvious that some guy hit a home run, the next guy up, you know, you weren't trying to hit him, but you wanted to make a point, throw it high and in. Those guys didn't dig in. And it was respect, you know, between the pitcher and the hitter and the hitter and the pitcher. But nowadays, I don't think the pitchers get that respect. These guys, you know, if you throw inside and the guy gets hit, the next thing you know, the umpires are warning this, warning that. And a pitcher is going to get beat to death if he can't use that inside part of the plate.
Any brawls in your day?
Oh, we had several.
were you the instigator in any of those?
Well, yeah. One, the first one I really remember, that it was a pretty bad one. It was kind of out in Oakland. And
Oakland and Kansas City didn't really like each other.
No, but Oakland was always front running. But this is the time we went into Oakland. I think we had a four game lead, and we had four games to play them. And then we were coming home to play Minnesota, and we lost the first two games. And I pitched the third, and it was a home run. And I said, okay, this is what you do. I went to try to knock Don Baylor down.
Mm. Oh.
And if you remember Don Baylor, he didn't give much at the plate. I mean, he hung over the plate, and I really didn't try to hit him. But the ball got away, and I hit him between the shoulder blades. And like I mentioned, that error, it wasn't that bad, but the umpire, everybody knew the situation. You know, they're closing in on us. They're within two games. And the next thing, the umpire, Tom Haller, he had one of those big outside chest protectors at the time. He jumps in front of Baylor. And Baylor was actually going towards first base. He didn't just charge. And Buck Martinez was the catcher. Well, when Haller went out there, I think Baylor got a little bit more fumed about the situation. He flipped him out of the way. And he flipped Buck out of the way, and I said, boy, this is like my third year in the big league. I'm dead, because I'm elevated, you know, on the mound, and I swear he's a foot taller than me. So that wasn't a good situation, but, you know, it was kind of a funny situation, too, because the next thing you know, I don't know if you remember back that far, Hal McCray, Oakland's, where our bullpen was, there was always just a little overhang over the relief pitchers, and people would run down the stands. I mean, it was more fight with the people in the stands, and it became a mess. But, yeah, we got through it. We were fortunate to win because Larry Gura pitched one heck of a game, the fourth game, and we won. I think we won 2-0. Then we went home, and I think we beat Minnesota, and it was like within a game, and I think the Angels beat Oakland, and we kind of snuck in by a game. So we knew what it took to take, you know, what it took to get there. So after that, after squeezing in, then we had a little bit more success after that.
Dennis, you talked about the guys you hung out with. Who was your number one buddy? Who was your favorite teammate? Who's the guy you still keep in contact with?
Well, basically, I don't know if people remember Tom Poquette.
Oh, yeah.
He was an outfielder that is credited for having padding put around the walls of Kauffman Stadium back at the time. Tom and I, we hooked up in Omaha. He signed before me. I signed in 72, I think. Tom signed in 71. And we played in Omaha together in 74, so I got to know him real well. We became roommates. Then I got called up in 75. Tom got called up a little bit later, but I continued to have him as a roommate. Then he got traded, like normal, in the middle of a game of a doubleheader against Boston.
Ooh.
And then he comes and pinch hits. I'm pitching the second game, and he pinch hits against me. And he didn't even look at me, and it was a nothing-nothing game. We wound up winning 1-0, but I'm looking at him. I just want him to smile. He wouldn't even look at me. I don't even think he saw the pitch I threw, but he popped up, and that's the only time I faced him. But we still stay in contact. He, after his playing days, he stayed in the Royals organization for a number of years, and he lives up in Sarna, Wisconsin.
That's north enough for me.
Yeah, it's up near Spooner somewhere, but, you know, he's a real good friend.
Probably catch some fish.
Yeah, right now through the ice.
Well, Dennis, we know you've got a lot going on. You've got the dedication and the great presentation going on in Minden today, and we sure appreciate you giving us some time on the Doug and Daddy Show, and always a pleasure to talk to a legend.
I appreciate you having me on the show.
Kansas City Royals Hall of Famer Dennis Leonard joining the guys from earlier this year when the Royals caravan came through the Kearney area, stopping down at Skeeter Barnes. The guys getting a chance to catch up with a Kansas City Royals legend there. Derek Stinson here in studio on a best-of edition of the Doug and Daddy Show. And before we head into break here, heading into the weekend, you want to get outfitted, you head over to Troutman's Quality Meats. They have freshly made hickory smoked bacon for this weekend. Make sure you go pick up some of that. Also, freshly made Italian sausage, and now Carrie and the gang have added a little more kick to it, a little more spicy there for you. So also, it's Lent. For all of you observing Lent, head to Troutman's. They have individual portions of seafood available, also more portions if you need, obviously, but they're great seafood as well, and obviously the best steaks you'll ever have. Head to Troutman's, just south of Bob's Superstore. Steer out front. We'll be there to greet you out front of Troutman's Quality Meats. So go get hooked up for the weekend, and maybe we'll see some good weather. We did over the last couple of days, so it's coming back, folks. It's coming back. Head to Troutman's Quality Meats and get hooked up. Coming up next, we're going to come back and have a talk, look with Joe Lenardi, the bracketologist. Had him on a little earlier this week on the Doug and Daddy Show. We'll take a look back at that interview coming up next on the Doug and Daddy Show, ESPN Radio.
All right, look, Doug and Daddy don't work for beer and pretzels. Well, they did for the first 3 months, till somebody told them that they should be paid. Well, anyway, they'll be back after these commercial messages.
Hi, it's Colin Cowherd, host of The Herd. In this economy, everybody needs to work a little harder and a little longer, but you don't want to give up family time or a social life. That's why I recommend Go to My PC, brought to you by Citrix. It's the best way to web commute. GoToMyPC is the easiest and most secure way to work on your office PC from home or on the road. Simply log on to GoToMyPC.com and your office desktop instantly appears. You can use any program, work on any file, check email, access network resources. You'll spend less time in rush hour traffic going back to work. Do it from home. You'll be super productive. Right now, I have an exclusive free trial just for my listeners. You'll get Go to My PC free for 45 days. This offer only available if you use the promo code Colin. Visit GoToMyPC.com, click on the Try It Free button. Remember to use the promo code Colin. You can get work done without giving up more of your life. GoToMyPC.com.
Got the down? Then you get the deal. And thanks to you, that's just exactly how it's worked for 28 years at Kearney Auto Sales. 1 year at a time, 1 day at a time, 1 deal at a time, and 1 customer at a time. At Kearney Auto Sales, your small down payment will put you behind the wheel of your next car or truck. At Kearney Auto Sales, we say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Got the down? Then come get your deal at Kearney Auto Sales on East Highway 30. Buy here, pay here.
This weather update is brought to you by Rich Peters and Matt Myers from Farm Bureau Insurance, located on North 2nd Avenue in Kearney.
Need health coverage? Now you can get the best of both. Personal service from your local Farm Bureau agent,
and a health plan from a company you know and trust, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska. Call today and find out about the great rates and great coverage available through your Farm Bureau agent. Among the many benefits, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska members enjoy fast and accurate processing of their claims. Farm Bureau agents Rich Peters and Matt Myers are proud to serve the Kearney area. Call them today at 234-4922. That's 308-234-4922 to learn more about affordable health plans for you, your family, or your business. Farm Bureau agents are independent and authorized insurance producers of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
We'll see considerable cloud cover and a few breaks just not in spots through the day today with a chance for some light snow developing as well. Accumulation by this evening, a coating to around an inch are possible with a high near 20. Winds will stay to the northeast at 5 to 15. We'll see a chance of light snow tonight with an inch or two possible with a low of 8 above. I'm Paul Trombley. Right now, 16.
Back on the Doug and Daddy Show, Friday edition, a best of edition. Doug and Daddy out of the studio today. Derek Stinson here, doing all the button pushing behind the scenes work and bringing you some of the best of interviews over the last couple of months to kick off the new year here. First couple of months of 2009, we're taking a look back at some of the best interviews right now. Actually, just from earlier this week, Joe Lenardi, ESPN bracketologist, joining the guys to take a look at just the upcoming NCAA tournament and maybe the Huskers' chances of getting in as well. Here's Joe Lenardi with the guys.
We're getting closer and closer, and games are bigger and bigger every single night. It's Tuesday, it's Big Monday, it's Wednesday. There's a game every single night that makes a difference in college basketball, Tony, and that's what makes this time of the year very exciting. When you look every day, the possible teams getting into the NCAA tournament can change.
Well, they can't change if you follow bracketology on ESPN because the guy's all over it is Joe Lenardi. Joe, we're pleased to be joined on the Doug and Daddy Show with Joe Lenardi right now. Joe, thanks so much for the time and welcome to our show.
Happy to do it, fellas.
Well, Joe, did you ever imagine back in the day when this all got started kind of as a dream job that you would almost make a living out of doing this?
Oh, heck no. I'm not that smart. I'd like to say there was this grand plan, to become, the Kreskin of the brackets, as somebody called me about an hour ago. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I just happen to love the NCAA tournament, and who doesn't?
Well, Joe, it's obviously, and people are getting into the match play that starts today. You know, that's a bracket thing, which makes it exciting. But
yeah, they need to invite me.
I think that might be harder to pick because you've been dead on for so long here. Is it getting easier and more predictable when we get down to that last week to tell who's getting in? Has the criteria, the groundwork been laid down by the NCAA committee so that there's less questions after those 65 teams come out?
I think it's more like a tide, like the sands shift in subtle ways every year based upon the membership. And, you know, part of my work is to try and read the tea leaves in advance to get a sense of how they'll handle certain situations. Like you can show me, suppose like the last vote is between Notre Dame and Creighton, let's say. You get two very different kinds of profiles from two very different kinds of conferences. You know, how has the committee done that in the past? Is there anything about this year's membership which might kind of skew it one way or another? I mean, in terms of biases, I just might mean in terms of philosophy. Like there are so many safeguards in place to prevent any favoritism. That's not the question for me. It's just, you know, some people like beef and some people like chicken. Some people like major conference teams, even if they have losing records in their leagues, and other people like the 25-26 win mid-majors. There's no right or wrong answer.
Joe, I want to ask you about the number one seeds right now. Pittsburgh, North Carolina, UConn, and Oklahoma are yours. How many teams are locked into those spots, barring disaster, and how many are still in contention for number one seeds right now in your mind?
Well, I don't think it's anywhere near as locked as it was last year, when not only did we have the four number ones almost preordained in October, you know, Memphis, Kansas, UCLA, and Carolina, and then for the first time ever, all four made it. to the Final Four. You know, we've had three of the four projected number one seeds lose in the last week, and one of them, Oklahoma, losing twice. So while I would say to you that I still think those are going to be the four number ones, it would not surprise me at all if a UConn were to swap spots with a Louisville at this point, or if an Oklahoma were to maybe swap spots with a Memphis. One thing I will tell you for sure is they're not all four making it to Detroit. It's just too hard.
Joe, obviously you even brought up Creighton here, and this week, or at least right now on the website, you brought in some other people for a mock selection committee, so it's a little different than just your selections up this week.
Yep. It's a lot easier to just get me agree with me.
I see that. You don't have to worry about anything, and your column obviously says how it was maybe a little more, I don't know if entertaining is the exact word, but Creighton left out, Northern Iowa put in as the conference champ, which, fine, however that pans out. But the Missouri Valley's been pretty strong over the last few years and has done well in the tournament. Should that weigh in, or should every year be set aside differently?
By rule, not by opinion, by rule, every year is its own entity. And that was reinforced again by the committee chair and the NCAA staff that worked our exercise up at ESPN over the weekend. And the way it shook out in the Valley and our little demonstration was, you know, early in the process, what we're mimicking is the committee several days at it and trying to do it in one long day. We were told that you and I and Creighton were playing for the Valley title, and then we were told a couple hours later that you and I had won the game, which, of course, put Creighton back into the at-large pool. And they did not make it to our final balloting for one of the last few spots, although I have to say I was voting for them. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on the radio in Nebraska. I've had the good fortune of seeing Creighton up close and personal this year. I did one of their games, and I'm one of those people who likes the 25-win mid-major.
Bracketologist Joe Lenardi joins us from ESPN on the Doug and Daddy Show. Joe, this week's Big 12 teleconference, you know, featured Frank Martin of Kansas State. Well, it features every coach, obviously, but Frank Martin of Kansas State, in a rapid-fire burst, touted the following Big 12 non-conference wins: Texas over UCLA, Villanova, Wisconsin, St. Joseph. He went on to do several teams in this, pointing out big wins. Then he went on to say, now, why do I read all of that off to you? Because Nebraska and us are in the top four or five in our conference, and all of a sudden our conference is not very good. In the Big East, when Georgetown's or whoever else loses close games, they say it's because their league is so good. When teams in our leagues lose close games, they say it's because the league isn't good enough. Your thoughts about Frank Martin's statements?
I would ask, of the great wins that were cited by Coach Martin, were any of them teams that he beat? Or that Nebraska beat?
Well, Nebraska, he's got Creighton.
Okay, but but Creighton's not a tournament team.
Right.
Certainly not a lock. I mean, they're another fellow bubble team. It's not about conferences, and I don't know how many ways the NCAA or people like I can say that. It's not part of the selection process. It's not part of the seeding process, and no one is evaluating the relative merits of leagues. It's a question of how does Kansas State or Nebraska or Oklahoma State, or Notre Dame, or Southern Cal, or Creighton, or Siena, or South Carolina, or Dayton, or any other so-called bubble team compare within that group. Period. End of story. What your league did 4 months ago, if it wasn't you, is plainly irrelevant and should be. I would suggest that, as nicely as I could, that, you know, maybe he should coach his team and leave the bracketing to the people who do that.
Well, right now, four Big 12 teams are in.
Doesn't mean this team's good, bad, or indifferent. It means that what Texas did against Villanova is irrelevant.
When you take a look at how important everything is, one of the components is the last 10 games and how teams have done. But maybe just kind of following up on that a little bit, Joe, there is a human element when it comes to finishing off the last few teams. How hard is it? Let's face it. If Duke is 22-11 and Nebraska is 22-11, we all know Duke is getting in. How hard is it for the newcomer to get in that first time as compared to the perennial power staying in the tournament?
Again, I think it's who did you play, who did you beat, Where did you beat them? Because you don't get home games in the tournament. And when? Are you playing your best basketball closer to the time of the actual tournament? And I think if you were to lay side by side the best wins of a Duke against the best wins of a Nebraska, it would be pretty clear which resume is stronger. And that's not a knock on the newbie. It's just a fact. And, you know, whether it, if it's an issue because Nebraska can't get those games, that's an administrative issue separate from the evaluation process. If it's because they got those games and lost more of them than a Duke, then that makes the evaluation a little bit easier.
Joe, I think a lot of people in Nebraska are just begging for a little bit of attention nationally for this team, which Doc Sadler
had. It is a fun team, I will say.
You know, in following this team, what does Nebraska, in your mind, have to do to have an opportunity or a chance? When it's all said and done, what do they have to do to have a chance?
What does Al Davis say, the coach of the Raiders?
Just win, baby.
He was miscast. He should have been on the committee. Because he's clearly not doing a very good job as an owner.
Well, he got that.
So maybe
right.
He could go around the country and just tell these bubble teams, just win, baby.
Well, Joe, last question, and we'll let you get out of here. Joe Lenardi, bracketologist for ESPN. You've talked about those four teams. Your job is to pick who you think is going to get in. What about the actual talent?
Actually, I think my job is to tell the country what I think the committee's going to do.
And you do pretty good at that, by the
because
way.
Because I wouldn't necessarily vote myself the way the final bracket of ours appears. Like, I would, like if Creighton loses in the Valley Final, I would absolutely vote for them. But I'm going to look at what I think the committee's going to do with the last few teams.
So when you fill your bracket out then, when they're actually playing, who do you like?
I'm in the privacy of my own voting booth.
Well, who do you like right now?
To win it all?
Yeah.
I think I like Pitt and Memphis in the final, first team to 60 wins.
Wow. I'm going to save that little nugget right there because that's that would
be. They could end up being
chart.
In the
yeah.
same region
yeah.
and unable to meet in the final, or they could end up being bracketed to meet in the national semifinals. We have no idea. Or one of those teams could suffer a significant injury, or you know, I could be struck by lightning or hit by a bus. Hopefully, a very small bus. So you know, it's still only February 24th. We don't have to have those picks in until noon Eastern on March 19th.
Well, Joe,
I plan to take every minute.
Right. Joe, the bracket is today. Does Tiger win the match play? We'll get you off your sport.
Either way, he's a winner because he's married to a Swedish bikini model who has a twin sister. How's that for an answer?
There you go. He's got a great education to go behind it at St. Joe. He's Joe Lenardi, ESPN's bracketologist. Joe, sure appreciate you giving us some time this morning on the Doug and Daddy Show. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, fellas.
Great interview with ESPN bracketologist Joe Lenardi. The guys catching up with him a little earlier this week, and that for you here on a special best of edition of the Doug and Daddy Show here on Friday. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap things up here on the Doug and Daddy Show.
You're listening to the Doug and Daddy Show on Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation. Two gentlemen who are known for their razor-sharp wit, insightful commentaries, probing interview techniques, and charm. These broadcasting mega men will be back right after this. All right, you two. I said what you wanted. Now, where's my money?
Tax season is here again. Fortunately, you can turn your 1040 into 1080p from Sony and save $300 with the purchase of a qualifying Sony Bravia HD TV. Now, through February the 28th, use Tax Cut software backed by the people of H&R Block and put the refund towards a qualifying Sony Bravia HD TV. Hurry, because this offer won't last long. To learn more about how you can save up to $300 on a qualifying Sony Bravia HD TV, visit sony.com/1040.
Hotels.com gives you a free night for every 10 nights you book. We're basically rewarding business travelers for doing what they already do. It's like giving you a blue ribbon for wearing a tie, a gold medal for shaving, and a Lifetime Achievement Award for putting on pants. So, stay 10 nights in one hotel or one night in 10 different hotels. Any combination, and get a free night. Welcome rewards from Hotels.com. The smarter way to book. Join online or call 1-800-2-HOTELS.
Some exclusions and restrictions apply. See site for details. In order to test his will, Fred likes to subject himself to extreme conditions. Today, he's swimming with the Polar Bear Club during a blizzard.
Yee-haw!
At Train, we believe in extreme testing too. We expose them to desert-like heat, Arctic-like cold, and a gauntlet of abuses. So you can be confident you're investing in the most durable, reliable system available.
Get your extreme tested Train from the folks that continually pass the test with our customers. Tested, tried, and true. That's why you want to call Fidelki Heating and Air.
It's hard to stop a Train.
Have an itch that needs to be scratched? Well, here's where you get relief. Eagle Crest Homes, West Highway 30 in Grand Island. You decided against that Honolulu or Paris vacation this year, huh? Well, then take several small vacations to state or national parks in your new camper from Eagle Crest. Fifth wheels to fold downs, Eagle Crest has them all and more, like new Nebraska Strong custom-built Bonavilla homes starting as low as $84.9. So scratch your camper or your new home itch at Eagle Crest, West Highway 30 in Grand Island. Eagle Crest Homes, a subsidiary of Chief Industries.
Up next, a fresh forecast from the guys at Weather Eye, brought to you by Molly's Motorworks on East 25th in Kearney, where you always get a square deal and a fair shake. If you drove down 25th Street in Kearney 20 years ago, you'd see a lot of things you wouldn't even recognize, except for that one place on East 25th, Molly's Motorworks. Well, even back then, when you were in need of a quality used car or truck, you knew you could always count on Molly's. Today, you can count on a great deal on this 2003 V6 automatic Chevy Silverado for only $59.95. Yes, sir, Molly's Motorworks on East 25th in Kearney, where you always get a square deal and a fair shake. Good to know.
We'll see considerable cloud cover and a few breaks just on in spots through the day today with a chance for some light snow developing as well. Accumulation by this evening, a coating to around an inch are possible with a high near 20. Winds will stay to the northeast at 5 to 15. We'll see a chance of light snow tonight with an inch or two possible with a low of 8 above. I'm Paul Trombley. Right now, 16.
Back on the Doug and Daddy Show, wrapping things up for this Friday, heading into the weekend. Of course, Doug and Daddy out of the studio today had a best of edition. Look back with Kansas City Hall of Famer Dennis Leonard, also Hank Parker on the program, and Joe Lenardi, ESPN bracketologist as well. We were going to bring you an Indomicon Sue interview from earlier this year, but obviously we're a little up against it. No time for that here today. We'll probably get to that one of these other days here. But before we get out of here, we do have some district boys basketball information to pass along to you. The C14 district final, Hastings St. Cecilia versus St. Paul from Aurora, is going to be on Monday at 6:30, the C16 district final from Ogallala pitting Kearney Catholic against Shadron. That's 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Looks like out there in Shadron, obviously 7 o'clock Central Time here. That on Monday as well. The C25 district final at Grand Island Central Catholic will have Blue Hill taking on Ravenna at 7 o'clock on Monday. Then on Tuesday, the D11 district final, Meade and Bruning Davenport will go on Tuesday. From York, the D12 district final. Osceola taking on Giltner, that also on Tuesday. A couple other Tuesday games, the D15 district final, Centura from Centura High School, I should say, Overton taking on Burwell, and the D16 district final, Arapahoe taking on Juanita Palisade, that coming up on Tuesday as well. The guys will be back on Monday on the Doug and Daddy Show. We'll recap the weekend in sports. Have a great weekend, everyone.
You've been listening to a Doug and Daddy podcast brought to you by Cunningham's Journal. Cunningham's Journal, the only bar you need to know in Kearney.
Oh, darling, I feel like amazing.
Don't make me do that again.
Game over!